Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. If you ride the trains or buses, heads up, there's big mass transit news on at least two fronts this morning. One is the bipartisan infrastructure bill that Democrats and Republicans have actually agreed to move forward on in the United States Senate. Mass transit spending was one of the last big sticking points, but the White House now says the emerging deal will include the largest federal investment in public transit ever, both for local systems and for Amtrak. And locally, we have the news that Sarah Feinberg, the interim president of New York City Transit, the city's bus and subway system, is leaving. Her last day is tomorrow. The leadership of the whole MTA is in flux now. The MTA includes the city's buses and subways, plus the Metro North and Long Island Railroad commuter lines and the bridges and tunnels within the city. Sarah Feinberg joins us now. Thanks for coming on again, and I guess it's now an exit interview. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks. It's good to be with you. Always good to be on with you.
And you confirmed the story, right? Tomorrow's your last day?
Tomorrow's my last day. Yeah, we had I had previously announced this. It's getting some new looks and some new news this morning because I gave an interview to the New York Post. But tomorrow's my last day as president of New York City Transit.
And Governor Cuomo, as I understand it, had wanted to split the MTA leadership into two separate jobs, with you taking one of them. If I understand correctly, you were willing to stay on in one of those roles, but not in this role or as head of the whole MTA after that plan to split the leadership failed. If I do have that right, why the one but not the others?
Yeah, I know. It gets complicated fast. That's right. So the governor sent a bill to Albany suggesting that we split the top role. So right now that the MTA is led by one person who's both the CEO and the chair of the board. The legislation suggests that we split the role into two, one being the CEO and one being the chair of the board. I've actually long advocated for this over the last, two or three years. Look, the MTA is, a multi-billion dollar agency, 72,000 employees. On its best day, we need as many hands on the wheel as we can, good, smart, experienced folks leading the organization. And the reality is this is not its best day. Ridership has fallen off since the pandemic. We have a huge capital program ahead of us, major projects, congestion pricing, all of that stuff on the horizon. And, the theory is, we need more strong leaders running the agency. So we'll see if the Senate acts. We're waiting for them to act. I was willing and I'm still willing to step in and be the chair of the board and it would be an honor to do so. And if the Senate acts, I'm happy to step into that role.
Talk about a tough time to take a job. You were appointed interim president of New York City Transit after the very popular Andy Byford left that job, partly because he felt Governor Cuomo was making the job intolerable. He used that word. And, you came on in March of last year, and the pandemic started here in March of last year. You had to run the system and deal with large numbers of COVID deaths in your own workforce. So 16 months later, Sarah Feinberg, how are you?
Oh, 17 months, but who's counting? Running New York City Transit is a massive challenge. Largest transit agency in North America, millions of customers, 472 stations, right? It's a huge system. It's a huge challenge on any day. It's also what I've long described as the best job in transportation in America. It is so challenging, so exciting, but you impact the lives of so many New Yorkers every single day in a way that I just love. Getting people home, getting people to work, getting people to school, just the basics of helping people, live in a city. And so it's a wonderful job. Running New York City Transit during COVID was an unbelievable challenge. Obviously, you hit on the just massive impact that COVID had on our workforce. Thousands of our colleagues were sick, were ill, were out on quarantine. And more than 150 New York City Transit men and women passed away. And so it was by far the hardest thing to deal with as president of New York City Transit. But, you know, my hardest day paled in comparison to what the men and women of New York City Transit were going through. So both the folks who were sick and who passed away and their families, obviously, but also just the men and women who showed up every single day and, as I say, you know, carried the city on their back for the last 16 months, operating buses, operating trains, you know, working in stations, cleaning, working in dispatch, doing it all. So it's been the honor of a career.
Nicely said about the workforce. Andy Byford felt marginalized by Governor Cuomo, like he was being excluded from decisions affecting New York City Transit, even though he was president of New York City Transit. Has that been a problem at all for you?
I have never felt that way. I have I've made my own decisions. I have executed on my decisions. I have always been involved. I felt like the governor has been a great partner to me. You know, others have felt differently. Obviously, I would never try to speak for Andy, but I have never felt that way. And I feel like we've had a great partnership, and I've enjoyed working with him. We share a vision for, you know, what this system can be. You know, I've long said that I think that New York City Transit can be the shining star of transit for, you know, certainly for the country and really for all of the world. And we've got a ways to go before we get there, but he shares that vision, and I've appreciated both his partnership, but also, you know, the fact that he has worked with me, deferred to me, and promoted me.
Are there any decisions you've made as president that Governor Cuomo may not have been crazy about?
I am sure there have been decisions that I have made as New York City Transit president that he was not crazy about. But to his credit, I have never heard about them.
And listeners, we can take some phone calls for Sarah Feinberg as she departs tomorrow as interim president of New York City Transit. These questions can be about the state of the buses and the subways, not just about sort of the leadership of the MTA and those chess pieces which are in flux moving about the leadership chessboard right now. 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. One issue I keep seeing reported about for the buses and subways right now is service delays because of staffing shortages. Can you give us an update on how you see the staffing situation right now and its effect on service at this time?
Yep. So, you know, during the height of the pandemic, and really beyond the height of the pandemic, the MTA went into a hiring freeze, which means, you know, obviously people move on, they retire, they move on to other jobs, but the hiring freeze means that we do not rehire into positions. We've been through hiring freezes in the past. I think actually for most of my time on the board and as president, we've been in a hiring freeze. But what was different about the one during the pandemic was that the hiring freeze was extended to our operational titles. So train operators, bus operators, conductors, those positions that previously, even during a hiring freeze, we would continue to hire. And so that's had a huge impact. You know, look, the financial crisis that we went through was dire. I don't think anything in MTA's past has compared to it. And so we had to take, you know, significant steps to address it. But it, you know, it's had a significant impact on our operations. Now, to be clear, we lifted that hiring freeze in February. We've been hiring into those operational titles ever since. You know, with the lifting of, you know, some of the COVID restrictions over the last couple of months, we've been able to have more flexibility in hiring, obviously, more flexibility in training, larger class sizes. Obviously, with the Delta variant and COVID making a bit of a comeback, we'll see what happens. But look, anyone who leads a transit agency will tell you that the worst thing that can happen to that agency, apart from, you know, a fatal incident or a catastrophic incident, is going into a hiring freeze, because it's just very hard to dig out of. Now, because we've got so many train operators, bus operators, conductors, folks who can, you know, work an overtime shift, who, you know, can continue to be on call and move those buses and trains, the impacts have been less than they could have been. We also have really, you know, strategic, experienced people in our rail operations control center who can do what we call a flex the headway, so that, you know, when we are experiencing a crew shortage on a particular line, they can shift the trains around a little bit, move headways around so that people are less impacted. But there's no question that it's had an impact. And one of the things that, you know, I hope to work on if the Senate takes up my nomination as chair, and that I know, you know, Jan Oliber hopes to work on if he becomes CEO, is to address those shortages immediately. We want to hire as quickly as we possibly can to bring workers back and to bring on more workers so that we can run as much service as possible.
If you're just joining us, Sarah Feinberger is our guest on her second to last day as interim president of New York City Transit, though as you hear, she may be taking another leadership job soon within the MTA. Our first two listener questions on Twitter are both about masks. One person asks, the MTA is doing a terrible job enforcing, much less conveying, mandatory mask rule. There needs to be more signage in every single car and at every entrance into the subways. And the other one says, since she's leaving, is there anything blunt Ms. Feinberg would care to say to the NYPD and the mayor about how so many cops refuse to wear masks properly or at all while on the subways and buses? Will you take those two questions?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So first of all, you know, we are, you know, I think that we're doing a really good job of getting the message out that masks are still required in the transit system. You know, obviously your listener feels like we need to do more in terms of signage and messaging. I feel like we're doing a lot, but we can always do more, and I'll take that back to the team and have them take another look at, you know, are there more places we can put up signs? Are there more ways to message to customers? Masks are absolutely required in the system. That's a federal mandate, and it also just makes sense. You know, the transit system is not a system that a lot of people use by choice, right? A lot of people have to use the transit system to get to work, to get to school, to get to doctor's appointments. And so we inevitably have in the transit system a vulnerable population, folks who have been unable to get vaccinated for some reason, folks who have an underlying condition, maybe they're receiving medical care. And so you've got to make sure that you're protecting those folks who you know, are particularly vulnerable. And so even,
kids.
A couple of weeks ago, sorry?
Including kids, yeah.
Absolutely, yes. The under 12 population that hasn't had access to a vaccine yet. You've got to protect those folks. So, you know, even a couple of weeks ago when, you know, mandates were being lifted, we kept ours in place, both for the federal, because of federal regulations, and also because it just makes sense in the transit system. In terms of, look, folks not wearing masks, particularly police officers, everyone should be wearing a mask. You know, I see the tweets, I see, you know, the sort of consternation about the police not wearing masks. Certainly for the MTA police, who obviously work for the MTA, we are, you know, vigilant about reminding folks you must wear a mask when you're in the system. It's the right thing to do. It's our policy internally. And look, everyone should be doing it. I understand, you know, the weather, it's hot, it's uncomfortable. But at this point, you know, it's just the right thing to do, particularly as the variant comes back.
The city and the state are both imposing vaccination or testing mandates for their workers. The MTA technically is neither a city agency nor a state agency. Do these mandates for vaccination or testing apply to bus and subway workers?
My understanding is they don't technically apply because the MTA board would have to take action to mandate vaccinations or mandatory testing. But certainly, you know, personally, I feel like it's an important mandate. Look, we are a workforce that is obviously in touch with the public, communicates with the public, and so I feel like it's important for us to be vaccinated. But beyond that, we have paid such a heavy price for COVID. You know, the number of, you know, it's still hard for me to talk about, but the number of spouses and children that I have talked to on the phone who lost a member of their family who worked at New York City Transit, I think if you could imagine some of those conversations, you would understand why I am very much in favor of vaccination. And I would love to see every member of our workforce who's able to get a vaccine.
But that's still just encouraging it. What's on the docket for people listening to this who think, wait, I want bus and subway workers to have this mandate along with all the other public sector workers? Is there a plan? Is the MTA board going to meet and vote on this?
Well, so it'll be up to the board. I know that there are discussions about it, and I'll leave it to the board to act on it. But certainly, just personally, I would be in favor of it.
Josephine in Queens, you're on WNYC with Interim Bus and Subway New York City Transit System President Sarah Feinberg. I almost got her title right. Josephine, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. I appreciate this is your last day, but maybe you could pass this information on. It was horrible on Monday. It was hot. I was looking for the R train. I got on the R train and couldn't understand, you know, why not post it along, you know, where they tell you the next stop. All it kept saying was listen to the announcement. You couldn't understand the announcement. I wound up on 72nd Street, which is the 2nd Avenue line, came back to 63rd, found out the F train was not going to quit. No one knew what was going on. And to boot, when I got to the token booth, as you can tell by my age, I say token booth, she was telling me to take the number 7 train. That doesn't go to Woodhaven Boulevard. Then she told me to take the LIRR, that they were honoring our MetroCard. Well, unless they were planning to have the LIRR stop at Woodhaven Boulevard on the trellis and I was supposed to jump off, I don't know what I mean, it was ridiculous. Mm. Fortunately, I know I know pretty good at the subway system. I knew I could get off and take a bus or an express bus, but imagine for someone who is not aware like I am.
Josephine, thank you. Maybe that operator thought you said Woodside, where those trains do go. But Sarah Feinberg, there was a big mess on Monday, and there have been a lot of days like that recently because of staff shortages or whatever. So what would you say to Josephine about the particular and more generally?
Yeah, look, we, you know, in an ideal world, and certainly my wish would be that Josephine never has an experience like that and that no customer ever has an experience like that. You know, it's those experiences are frustrating. You know, Josephine had a place to go where she needed to be, and she was both delayed and having trouble figuring out, you know, the best way to get there. And so, you know, I will say that there is no workforce in the world that I've ever experienced that cares more about delivering customers safely and efficiently to where they're trying to go. And we're not always perfect. And, you know, we've got a whole host of things that are working against us on any given day. You know, sometimes it's a system malfunction. Sometimes it's the fact that our infrastructure is more than 100 years old. Sometimes it's climate change and, you know, flash flooding from several inches of rain in a couple of hours. There are all kinds of things that our workforce is contending with. But, you know, bottom line is we'd all like for Josephine and all of her fellow riders to get where they're going, you know, quickly and efficiently, and our apologies that she didn't have a good experience on Monday.
Well, is that a staff shortage issue? I know we talked about this a little bit already, but like in some parts of the private sector, people are leaving or not returning to the kinds of work they had before in equal numbers because of the COVID era demands and risks and stress, restaurant workers, retail, nurses, other healthcare workers to different degrees. How true is that for bus and subway workers, and how much is that affecting service?
Yeah, look, I think there's all kinds of reasons for it. Certainly, I think given the last year and a half that not just we as New York City Transit have had, but we as a country have had dealing with COVID, I think all kinds of different pieces of all workforces are thinking about how they want to spend their time, what they want to do. You know, do they want to work at home? Do they want to be with their families? Do they want to be in a line of work that's flexible? So I think certainly we're dealing with that. You know, but at the same time, I think, you know, we are dealing with a whole host of other challenges that I sort of just went through in response to Josephine. You know, the good news is that we are the biggest transit system in North America. We run tremendous amounts of service. You know, I have lived in other cities. I lived in Washington, D.C. for many years, where the headways were frequently 8 minutes during rush hour, 12 minutes, you know, in the middle of the day, 20 minutes, 30 minutes in the middle, you know, in the middle of the day and the weekend. That's not to say people should just, you know, be happy with the service that they're getting. It's just to say the good news is we run tremendous amounts of service. And so even when we have a really tough day, and we have crew shortages, maybe we have a signal problem, maybe we have a maintenance issue, maybe something else has gone wrong. We run so much service that there are generally options for people, which is good. You know, on this crew shortage issue specifically, you know, we pulled out, over the last couple of weeks, we've pulled out specific causes for delays to trains. Was it a crew shortage issue? Was it a CBTC issue? Was it a different signal issue? Was it the fact that, you know, we had a maintenance issue? What was the exact problem? And in, you know, what we learned from that is that most riders are probably experiencing about 1 minute to 1 minute 15 seconds of delays due to crew shortages. So that is not to say it's not frustrating. It certainly is. When you need to be somewhere, you need to be somewhere, and it doesn't help that it's 95 degrees and you're wearing a mask and, you know, it's becoming increasingly crowded. But, you know, I do think that we're running so much service. Well, we're actually in a better place than we were, if you can believe it, in 2019, certainly in 2017, 2018, but even 2019.
So you're saying just an average of 1 minute delays,
yeah,
as a result of staff shortages right now.
Yeah, that's right. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to have a tough day if you run into a staff shortage, you know, some other issue, a signal issue, and, you know, there's all kinds of things out there that happen, you know, beyond our control, like weather and you know, other issues, like police issues, things like that. So it doesn't mean you're not going to run into tough commutes here and there. But when we ran the numbers, it's about a minute to a minute and 15 seconds related to crew shortages.
But the answers you just gave don't seem to comport with the experiences that a lot of people say they're having and that have been in the press, which is that there are a lot of delays right now, and it's different than before the pandemic, worse.
Well, that's why I'm trying to say and preface it all with, I understand that there are days when it feels particularly bad. And when you're standing on a platform, it doesn't help, you know, waiting on a train, it doesn't help for me to say, oh, but, you know, the crew shortage is only impacting your commute by 1 minute or 2 minutes. I totally understand that. But the reality is, you know, when you look back, we are actually running pretty good service compared to 2020 and great service compared to 2017, 18, and 19. Again, you know, I understand that there are times when you're standing on a platform when it's frustrating. And look, the job of the president of New York City Transit is to hear those concerns and do everything I can to make sure that, you know, every rush hour, every commute goes as seamlessly as possible. And so that's always going to be our responsibility and something we own and something we're always trying to improve and get better at.
Yeah, I guess it's that 1 minute doesn't get equally distributed. So if a train is canceled due to a crew shortage, it's more than a minute delay, right? That line will run trains with greater spacing at that time. So when that happens, it doesn't feel like a minute because it's not a minute in those cases. The other lines may not have crew shortages that day, so they're not experiencing it all. So the 1 minute average is one thing. The experience for riders when there are crew shortages is different. That's fair, right?
Right. So when I was talking about flexing the headways, one of the things we try to do is we've got really experienced people in our rail control center who will see that we've got a crew shortage on one particular line. And let's say that the headways during rush hour on that line, you know, are supposed to be 4 minutes. So if we've got a crew shortage, rather than, you know, miss a trip and then have that headway be 8 minutes, they will try to flex the headways a bit so the next couple of mm-hmm. headways are 5 minutes or 6 minutes, as opposed to, you know, doubling that headway for one group. And obviously we're juggling wanting to make sure that, you know, we keep crowding on platforms to a minimum and run as much service as possible.
Paul in Washington Heights has a perennial bus rider's question, I think. Paul, you're on WNYC with Sarah Feinberg. Hi.
Oh, good morning, Brian, and hello, Ms. Feinberg. Thank you for shouldering this work. So I'd like to ask about what I call the pachyderm parade. That is to say, when the buses bunch up because of traffic or other causes, and you're waiting for a long, long time for a bus, and then three or four pass in quick succession, why can't the supervisors space out those buses in real time?
Great. Great question. Thank you for the question. I'm glad to talk about buses for a minute because it's been a huge focus of ours for the last, you know, 18 months and certainly and certainly before as well. So to that specific issue, we actually do have supervisors and dispatchers and what we call road ops out there on the streets, on corners, doing exactly what the caller just mentioned. So, you know, trying to prevent that bunching up. We're not always perfect. Traffic doesn't always cooperate, but that's exactly what we're out there doing, because obviously it doesn't help folks if there's a 15-minute wait and then you get three buses in a row. So we're trying to do that throughout the city. The other thing to know is that the best thing we can do for bus service in this city is to keep people out of bus lanes, to keep parked cars out of the bus lane. If bus lanes are only for buses, this city moves really well. And it's been a big focus of ours for the last 18 months. In fact, the first thing I did as interim president before COVID sort of took over everything was we'd implemented what we call the ABLE system, which is a camera system where we've got cameras on the front of buses, and as they proceed through the bus lane, they're taking photos of the license plates of cars that are blocking the bus lane. So UPS vehicles, FedEx vehicles, the cable company, sometimes the police officer, sometimes the delivery truck, the Amazon folks, or even just folks who are trying to run into a coffee shop or a store to do a quick errand. The camera takes a photo of that license plate, and then the person gets ticketed. And the thought is that once you get one or two of those tickets, you learn your lesson and you stay out of the bus lane. And one of the first things I did when I became interim president was we sent a letter to the top 10 companies that were our biggest offenders of sitting in the bus lane blocking traffic. And we sent them a letter and said, look, you've gotten dozens and dozens or hundreds of these tickets. What are you doing? You've got to get out of the bus lane. You're screwing up people who are trying to get places in our city. It's also not safe. We shouldn't be asking our bus operators to swing out into traffic. We shouldn't be asking, our customers, our riders, the elderly population, our disabled, community to try to get on a bus that's like swung out into a lane of traffic. This has got to stop. And to their credit, a bunch of the companies wrote back and said, thank you for bringing this to our attention. We will address this immediately. Now, a couple weeks later, COVID took over, and we've certainly continued the program. And Jano and I have plans to expand the program and put even more cameras on buses so that we can keep those bus lanes clear. And I'd also like to do busways as well, more and more of those busways. But look, I always say that the subway is my first true love, but buses are absolutely the future of how we're going to move this city, in the future, and we've got to get our bus lanes clear in order to be able to do it.
Yeah, good points about buses and bus lanes. We've just got a few minutes left. Let me try to run through a few things real quick. One, have you looked at the Senate's bipartisan infrastructure bill closely enough yet? I know this is brand new, to have anything yet on the implications for New York City's buses and subways.
Well, we have, and we're cautiously optimistic. It could obviously mean really good things for a bunch of our big projects, Penn Station reconstruction and access, new Bronx stations for Metro North, our State of Good Repair projects. So look, if that bill moves and can pass both chambers and get signed by the president, that's going to be great news for New York. And huge thanks to, the entire New York congressional delegation, and particularly to Senator Schumer for, the work that they've done to get just MTA specifically the resources that we need, but also really significant resources for all of New York.
Another COVID question also, with the very transmissible Delta variant, at the same time the governor is pushing for businesses to bring people back to work in person, to the extent that that means more crowded trains without much distancing possible within them, even if people are wearing masks, how safe can you make the subway cars now? And are there good numbers from recent months on COVID transmission?
Yeah, so we've said from the beginning of COVID, it is always going to be difficult to get social distancing on a New York City subway train and on a New York City transit bus, right? We are a big city. A lot of people use transit. Even at the heights of COVID, when ridership was 5% and 6% and 7%, there would be crowded trains and crowded buses because that's just the way people move in New York. So the most important thing is to be vigilant about your mask. Everything that I've seen and that others are seeing about the Delta variant and the the COVID resurgence is that vaccines still work and masks still work. And so that's the best thing that you can do to protect yourself and your loved ones. And that's why we're going to continue to be really vigilant about it.
And last thing, just about you, as you leave this job and go on to your next thing, from what I've read about you, your mother was a judge and your father a state legislator from your hometown of Charleston, West Virginia, of all places that seem remote mm-hmm. to most New Yorkers. How did you grow up in Charleston, West Virginia, and wind up as head of the New York City bus and subway system?
Right. Totally predictable, right? Yeah, my mother was an assistant U.S. attorney and then a federal judge. And my father was a state legislator when I was a little girl and has not been in the legislature since the 1980s, but remained a public servant and served on the Public Service Commission. And actually most recently spent many years running a soup kitchen as his second act. So it's a family of public servants. But, you know, my family moved to Charleston, West Virginia before I was born. My dad got a job there, and I will tell you, it was the most beautiful place to grow up. It is lovely. The mountains are absolutely beautiful. The people are so kind. It was just a joy, and I miss West Virginia every day. New York, and
how's the subway system in Charleston? I'm just kidding.
Exactly. But you know what? There's a good bus system, and I took the city bus to school a lot.
Yes. And then one more question about how you then went on to your professional career and how it relates to what you're concluding today and tomorrow. Because I see your background was first in communications. You've been communication director for the House Democratic Caucus, for example, crisis communications manager for Facebook at one time and other things. And then you were chief of staff of the transportation secretary under President Obama, and then head of the Federal Railroad Administration, the agency head yourself. I'm just curious, with that combination of experiences, what would you say, and as you take calls from listeners and hear their concerns and hear their frustrations, what would you say are the biggest specific communications or public relations challenges for people running mass transit agencies?
Look, I think most people who are running mass transit agencies, and I know this from close relationships with my colleagues across the country, is that we really don't play politics. You know, even though I have a background in government and politics, I have not been in a partisan position since, I think, almost 20 years, so since my mid-20s. And I've served in government. I've served for Democrats. I've served in the White House. I was appointed by President Obama to be the rail regulator for the United States, confirmed by a Republican Senate. But I think what we would all agree on is that it's not a political job. It is a policy job. It is a job where you are serving the public, but you are not serving the public in a political way. And the most important thing, as the president of any transit agency will tell you, is to be really transparent and clear with your customers and with the community you're serving. And, you know, I think looking back, you'll see that I've done that. I don't pretend that everything is fine on the service side. I say, this is, you know, we have crew shortages and this is why, and this is what we're doing to address it. I don't, you know, pretend that, you know, you're going to be able to get social distance on a New York City subway rail car. I say, that's going to be impossible. That's why you have to wear a mask. I don't say, you know, we don't have a safety and security issue in the subway system when felonies are up 300%. We say, this is what we're seeing, and this is how we're going to address it. And we've got to, you know, work together to get ourselves into a better place. And that's, I think, in my experience, the most important thing that you can do to serve the community that you're working in.
Sarah Feinberg, thank you for your service these past 17 months as interim president of New York City Transit. We look forward to having you back in your next role.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.